not role models. We're jeans models. Perfect for backyard football. I was talking with TJ earlier today about Brent Favre stuff, and that came up. So, good old Rain.
Oh, yeah. I remember when they did that when he was in the Vikings.
The good old days of Brent Favre. Oh, God. The Jets in the Super Bowl 40-66. That's more like it. Durf is a better hype man than The Rock. 110%. We got to talk about that eventually. That was the worst part of the Super Bowl. What's going on, everyone? This is the award-winning podcast on and off the field with Durf and Dylan, brought to you by NSPN Next Gen Sports Media and the PartyCast Network, where the party never ends. This is episode 30 of season 4. We hit episode 150.
Woo! Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. It's a good time. Should have got The Rock to hype that up for us. Can you smell what The Rock is cooking? He didn't. How do you do a hype and not even say that? Absolutely horrible. Horrible job done by the
author. We'll talk about it later.
So bad. All right. First and foremost, for anything else, we got to make sure everyone out there is flossing. Thank you for tuning in. Now you have to floss. Recommended by 10 out of 10 podcasters everywhere. Follow, like, observe, subscribe, and share anything on and off the field related. Durf, how can they do it?
Well, they can floss by following on TikTok, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, all by searching at OOTF Podcast. You can like by hitting that thumbs up, leaving a heart reaction, or just telling us how you like the show by leaving a review on any of our pages or on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you can observe by watching us live every week at this time from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesdays on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure you subscribe by clicking those subscribe buttons on Twitch and YouTube and making sure you're ringing those notification bells so that you get notified when we go live. And last but not least, make sure you share by letting your friends and family know about us by sharing out the stream when we're live or any post that you may like.
We appreciate every single thing that you do, all of it. Mm-hmm. We love it. Go podcasting. Congratulations. Thanks, TJ. 150. It's a pretty big moment. We've been doing this for way too long. Ugh. You know, I'm just hanging it up. We're done. I'm over it. Let's go.
All right. See you guys later.
See ya. You can't do it tonight. Obviously, we can't do it tonight.
No, definitely not tonight.
Definitely not tonight. We'll walk off the set next week. But tonight, we have a returning guest. Yeah. And I have to say, probably one of my more favorite guests that we've ever had on.
Yeah,
I have to say, definitely, like easily top one and a half.
Top one, yep. Yeah,
something like that. Somewhere ranked in there. We have the one, the only, Dane and Hughes. Where's my sound alert? There it is.
Oh, there we go.
Didn't happen fast enough. How you doing, Dane?
What's going on, fellas? I'm doing all right. Hanging in there.
Just trying to hang in by a thread, eh?
Yeah, you know, season's over. No more football. It's too quiet of a time right now. You know, NBA really hasn't taken off yet. Got to get closer to the playoffs. Baseball's not here. You know, I'm just running around my house with scissors and, you know, doing all kind of crazy stuff.
You got to find some way to get that adrenaline flowing these days.
That's right. That's right. Watching Eli Apple get toasted in the Super Bowl was definitely an adrenaline boost. So that took care of some of the trash talking side of me that I don't get out very much. So it was all good.
You just got to let Eli Apple's play speak for itself.
That's right.
He should have known better. The way he thinks it's going to go.
I mean, you got to love the confidence. You got to have that confidence to get to that level. You have to have a level of invincibility. But, like, you picked the wrong fight. And he broke a rule in starting a fight in social media after the game. Like, talk trash before the game. Talk trash during the game. I'm all for that. But whatever happens on the field should stay on the field. And you know, if you start going extra for after the game and you do it to millions of people and social media, you open yourself up, especially with the resume of the guys that you're dealing with. You're not talking about, you know, one-hit wonders that are, you know, in the NFL. You're talking about guys that were accomplished Super Bowl winners, Super Bowl runners-up, all pro, you know, pro bowlers, and that's the fight you pick before the biggest game of your career. He'll never live that down. And it was hilarious to me.
I just don't know who's going to grab him after this. He's not going to be a Bengal, that's for sure. That's a guarantee. But what team is going to want this on their team moving forward? Some guy that does that.
Yeah, and the fact that you opened the door for an onslaught of criticism, and the eyes and the all the microscopes are watching you every single week. You know, like, as a player, you should never alienate yourself from any team. Like, he'll never be a Chief, right? He won't ever be a Bengal again. He won't ever be a Giant again. So you're slowly knocking off teams that will look at you as a viable option in the offseason or while you're a free agent. And, you know, you don't ever do that. That's just life lessons. You don't alienate yourself if you want to work for Sprint. You don't talk about AT&T and everybody else and then just, you know, take away every option you have of working in a specific industry.
Yeah.
I can see it already. Eli Apple signed by the Seahawks. He'll be their slot corner. I can see it already. It's just guarantee. That's just kind of what we do. We take the rejects and just kind of throw them in there and pray to God they play at their highest level when they never do. So we have to talk, obviously, about the Chiefs because Dana Hughes, your TV radio broadcaster for the Kansas City Chiefs, color analyst. You also are NCAA football, baseball, and basketball for the Big Network, Big Ten Network in ESPN. Mm-hmm. And you're also a former two-sport pro with the Chiefs and the Brewers and an Iowa Hawkeye. Your resume does not end ever. Just keep talking.
Yeah, those are the good old days, man. That was, you know, I played football right after leather helmets. And so, you know, I'm a little old, a little long in the tooth. I joke. That was a joke. I'm not that old.
Okay. It's 2022. So I'm trying to do the math here. Okay. All right.
No, but yeah, I mean, I grew up in a sports oriented family and I love baseball. Baseball is my first love, well over football. But I found a longer career in football and was fortunate to get into the media world afterwards. And I love the science of the games, the pro games and the college games. And I think that kind of catapulted me into a role of being a color analyst for those sports because I kind of see the game differently. And I always tell people, I don't see it better than anybody, the general fan or whomever. I just see it differently. And I can offer some perspective, some different angles, some food for thought in some of the most popular sporting events that we have in this country. So it's been entertaining. It's been great. It's, you know, it makes me feel like I still got one foot in the locker room. And, you know, that's the camaraderie factor that a lot of athletes miss. I still can get by being in the booth.
I feel like we've been seeing that a lot more these days. Like, tell me if I'm wrong or not. Like, maybe I haven't seen it in the past, but former players getting into media spaces. I mean, it seems like it's all over the place today, whether you're behind a desk, like on an ESPN or Fox News show, or you're doing color analyst or anything like that. It seems like almost everyone's doing it these days. We had Aqib Talib at one point up in the box doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think that's part of the reason is that people want to hear our perspectives. It doesn't mean that we're right. Doesn't mean that we're better. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that the person that disagrees with us is an idiot and we are the supreme football knowledgeable guy. It just means that there's food for thought. And oftentimes I get text messages, tweets, after games, question Q&As, podcast invites where people are able to pose questions to me directly because I played on the field and they just want to know what that perspective is. How was it playing with Joe Montana? How was it playing in the AFC Championship and losing and that feeling, you know, being around Hall of Famers, having success in Kansas City, the transition into the booth, some of the things, good, bad, right or wrong, ugly or pretty, that athletes are doing now. Social justice, you know, racism, all of those different things. Like, I think while you have so many athletes, Richard Sherman and so many other guys have their own podcasts because people just want to hear their perspective. Oftentimes, they probably disagree with us, but they at least want to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that comes with the territory. You know, if you want to get out there and have an opinion and let the world know your opinion, I'm sure there's plenty of people ready to give their opinion right back. No matter who's wrong or right. That's why it's an opinion.
That's right. And so, to me, it's all about food for thought. It's all about just taking morsels of information and, you know, adding it to your already self-grown perspective, or maybe comparing it to something you heard on ESPN or saw some other things. One of the arguments I got on Twitter feud or whatever in the past years is some of my takes on special teams versus guys like Troy Aikman or what the quarterbacks Tony Romo and some of those guys have said during the game. And I'm like I'm not saying that my opinion is better, but I was a four-time special teams captain. Those guys were quarterbacks. They never paid attention to special teams. Now there's going to be aspects of them reading defenses and fronts and adjustments and things like that, that me as a wide receiver 40 yards outside the numbers probably will never understand fully. But it doesn't mean our perspectives are any less and doesn't need to be listened to or at least heard.
There's always the concept that I think a lot of people ignore where, you know, how about we all just get together and we share our opinions with everybody instead of immediately disagreeing with somebody like, oh, that's garbage. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
How about, you know, obviously, you know, more about special teams. Maybe if, you know, we all just ask the right questions and come together and we all start to learn special teams from the right people, we can all understand the sport better.
That's way too noble. That's way too noble for the Twitterverse. Too smart.
Sorry, I'm way out of line with that thinking. Garbage. Yeah, I'm throwing one quick audible question before we get to our list, which is a little bit more focused on like the 2021 season heading into the offseason. Because you brought up Richard Sherman. I just got to get your opinion real quick. Because we're going to talk about ourselves in a little bit. But the Matthew Stafford conversation about being in the Hall of Fame. I personally, just my own opinion right here, right now, I'm on Richard Sherman's side. Maybe not as bluntly as he put it, but I'm on Richard Sherman's side. We've had this conversation before about how the Hall of Fame is starting to become more like the Hall of Very Good. Mm-hmm. And if Matthew Stafford gets in, I think that's where he qualifies. He's very good. So I'm just kind of curious where you stand on the Matthew Stafford issue.
I'm 100%. In line with what you guys think, as well as what Richard Sherman said. And here's why. I played with guys that played on previous teams that were bad teams. And I played with guys, and we've seen guys go in and out of the league that have had puffed up stats because they played on bad teams. The one thing you know about mediocre to bad teams is that they're usually losing. That's why they're mediocre to bad. And when they're usually losing, that means they're throwing the ball offensively to have to try to keep up. It often also means that the defenses that they're losing to are usually in some sort of soft prevent type of defense for a large part of the second half, and that opens the door for empty stats. To me, the fact that he hasn't been an all-pro, he hasn't been the best quarterback in his division, he's not of the best quarterbacks in the league right now or in any window of time. And he had to win a Super Bowl by going to a super team that already pretty much had a Super Bowl roster and did not win the MVP of the Super Bowl. To me, as of now, if we're speaking of as of now in 2022, he is not a Hall of Famer. Now, if he goes to another Super Bowl, wins it, maybe wins the MVP, has a stellar year, maybe, you know, breaks some records. He and Cooper Kupp develop this relationship that they wind up being the best 1-2 type of tandem and that are talked about in NFL history. We can revisit it, but I agree, as of right now, not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. And it really, the Super Bowl argument was, he didn't win the MVP because he had two interceptions just in the biggest game. I mean, that right there should just tell you enough on a national stage where over 100 million people watched it. He did not have a stellar game. If he played a stellar game, they probably would have won this in the third quarter. But instead, Matthew Stafford just couldn't make the right passes at the right time. But he's a fourth quarter stud. He's had like what? I think he had three game winning fourth quarter drives just in this playoffs alone. He's clutch. I'll give him that.
But I mean, and it wasn't like he was void of talent in Detroit, like people want to also make it seem. I mean, he had Calvin Johnson, who's in the Hall of Fame for a large part of his career. So, you know, the fact that he's not been the best of the best quarterbacks spoken about in the NFC, never mind the NFL, at any window of time, people say, well, how do you get to a being an all-pro level when you're going against Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Patrick Mahomes and all these guys that have been all-pro and Pro Bowl? Well, there's your answer. If he can't break through this window of people, how do you expect him to wear a gold jacket? Like, that to me, that just doesn't make sense. Now, you know, if he's able to kind of ride this wave and they're able to keep things sustainable in L.A. And maybe get to a couple more Super Bowls, then we can have the conversation then. But now, to me, it's ridiculous that people even arguing that he deserves it right now just because he won a Super Bowl.
Well, TJ says he disagrees, and I'll have to grab my pitchfork and take to the world of Twitter. Seriously. That's what everyone's going to be doing. They're going to watch this interview and just go right over to – no, there's not enough people watching to care. No, it's fine. All right. So we have to talk about the nitty-gritty, the hard stuff here. All right. The hard questions. So we have to take it from the start of the year, obviously, because that's where all this – the storylines really started. Because the Chiefs started out 3-4. Mm-hmm. They were struggling at the start. So from what you could see from the beginning there, what was the main issue? And then how did they turn it around?
Well, I mean, if you remember, we were 2-3, 3-4. We were broken. Patrick Mahomes was broken. His offense was stale. Andy Reid had lost it. Eric Bieniemy didn't know what he was doing. All of those different narratives were part of the Chiefs' early part of the season. And then we strung off 8 straight wins. And even amidst that 8 straight win streak, you had, you played the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers-less Packers, and you played, the Giants with Daniel Jones, and you played the Dallas Cowboys who didn't have Amari Cooper, all of these excuses. Well, you guys have been around, and I've been around as long. In the NFL, a win is a win. There is no such thing as qualifying a win based on a losing team. Look at the Indianapolis Colts not making the playoffs because they played what probably was the worst team in the NFL in the Jacksonville Jaguars. They would love to have that win. They would have loved to have an extra week or two of playoff football. That's what's great about the NFL. For the Chiefs, when you look back in previous seasons, not last year because we had a great season, 16-1 before getting to the Super Bowl, 15-2 because we basically gave the last game of the season away to rest our starters. But prior to that, we had runs where it was a slow start. Under Steve Spagnuolo, you know, we had a run where we weren't the best in the first six games, and then we came along. So this is kind of par for the course for this Chiefs organization and this Chiefs team, that it's not about where we start, it's about where we end. And it just proves the point that so many players, including myself, have always talked about. I do not care. We do not care about being the best in September. We want to be the best in December. And so many people were, because of 24-hour media and daily shows, you can jump on and off the ship every single week if you'd like. That's what the narrative was for the Chiefs. And it was unfortunate because I thought there's so much football left to be played when they were 3-4. And there were people that were counting us out of the playoffs. I'm like, the season's not even halfway over yet, and we're out of the playoffs? How is that possible? And we were able to kind of resurrect the season. And I think it was more about Patrick Mahomes being more patient, taking what the defense was giving him, not always trying to make the big play. And when you started to see that, where he was dropping back and throwing the ball to his running backs, hitting quick throws to his tight ends early, not looking for the deep pass every single play, not looking for the highlight, that's when we became a more manageable, a more dominant offense, because teams didn't know how to take us. They didn't know how to defend this style based on the weapons that we had. And we were able to take advantage of that. And it just kind of showed that this team, they have a winning culture under Andy Reid. They know how to win. They know how to get to where they need to get to. It might take a different course, but they're going to get there. And they've done it for four straight years, four straight AFC championships hosted, six straight AFC West division titles. I mean, it's unheard of what they've been able to accomplish. And yeah, we wish we would have got another Super Bowl. Probably should have been there. You got to tip your cap to the Cincinnati Bengals, but this team still has a lot of really good football to come in the future.
Yeah, so definitely the Chiefs started rolling, it seemed like. So, after that, about week seven, week eight, they, really started to turn around, like you said. And it clearly seemed like, end of the season, they're on course for another Super Bowl. You kind of just mentioned the Bengals game here, but I'm going to go with the week before. And probably I want to say even better than the Super Bowl, this is probably, I think, the best game of the playoffs. Mm. And we're talking Chiefs-Bills. End of the game, it seems like both defenses just absolutely fell apart. Tied up, go to overtime, Chiefs get the ball, Bills defense couldn't stop them in overtime. Chiefs did what they do, and Mahomes, stays patient, finds Kelsey in the corner for a touchdown. Seeing how this was, being a Bills fan, you for the Chiefs, what were your thoughts on this game, and what do you think maybe the overtime rules need to be changed, not changed?
So I think it was the greatest football game played. It's the greatest football game that I ever witnessed. I think, and I've said this for years, in every sporting event, in every sport, baseball, basketball, football, whatever, there are moments, consciously or subconsciously, where teams decide, they may not know it, but they decide that they're either going to go for the win or try not to lose. And if you look at that Bills game, to me, there were aspects that were decided by both teams where they were trying not to lose. The last drive by the Bills to score the go-ahead touchdown, you can look at that Chiefs defense, and there was more hoping than expecting. They were hoping we would stop the Bills. We were hoping that they would make a mistake. We weren't imposing our will to force a mistake like the Rams did to the Bengals. We were hoping that plays would be made. We were trying not to lose, and we put ourselves in a position to almost lose. Now, flip the script, 13 seconds left, Chiefs have the ball, the Bills trying not to lose, and wind up opening the door for the Chiefs to tie the game with 13 seconds left. In overtime, as you mentioned, defense is decimated. They're tired. They're on their heels. They can't believe what happened. What are they doing in overtime? Trying not to lose as opposed to trying to win. And they paid for that. Now, as far as your question about the overtime rules, I 100% like the overtime rules as they are. Now, here's why. Everybody gets paid, offense and defense and special teams. So that means everybody has a job to do. They get paid to do a job. Do your job. The only thing you can look at from a defensive perspective, all you're being asked to do is something that you've been asked to do the entire other 60 minutes. Don't give up a touchdown. Like, you can give up points. Just don't give up a touchdown. And to me, that's much better than the way the rules were before, where I was a beneficiary of it on the good side and the negative side throughout my career. But all you're asked to do for guys that are making a lot, at some cases, there's defenders that are making much more than the guys on the offense. And we're just asking you not to give up a touchdown. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't think that that rule should be broken or changed. You go back 3 years ago when the Chiefs didn't get the ball against the Patriots. The Chiefs lobbied the NFL to change the rule. The NFL said no. And now, you know, we flipped the script. I didn't agree with it back then, even though the Chiefs were the team that got the short end of the stick. And I don't agree with it now. I think the defense has to play. Now, if this was college or high school, I'd probably have a different perspective because those guys are not getting paid. So okay. I can accept the college and high school overtime rules because those are all kids, college kids, you know, let them decide it on both sides of the field. But on the pro level, when everybody's getting paid, you're getting paid to do a job. Don't give up a touchdown and then let the other team, the fate fail where it goes.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't hate the argument by any means. No. I feel like this is like one of those things where like every sports fan, this is an argument that's split 50-50, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it and I think we both came to the conclusion that we'd like to see it changed. I think we each had our own different way of how we'd like to see overtime play out. But then we've heard so many arguments on both sides of the aisle. Who knows where it lands? Because this is just going to keep happening. If the rule does stay the same, the NFL has to put their foot down and literally just say, the rules are not changing, deal with it. Because every time this scenario happens, some fan base is going to be screaming for the rules to change, and it's just never going to end. So you either have to change the rule or make a firm statement saying it's not changing. Shut up about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think they got it right this time. There are so many rules that are questionable to wrong. I don't like the idea that you look at defensive penalties automatically equal first downs. I think that's BS. I think you got defensive penalties that are not reviewable. Roughing the passers should be reviewable. I like the premise of pass interference. What was that, a couple of years ago when it was supposed to be reviewable, only for the referees to basically buck the system and never do it? Mm-hmm. To me, I thought that was callous. It was unfortunate for the NFL because at the speed of the game and how fast the game is played, I feel bad for the officials. Like, you can't keep up with it. And to say that you're going to miss a call, Jalen Ramsey gets his face mask pulled down, you get push-offs down the field in different games, and you just keep your flag in the pocket, who's to say that that's not the game-winning play? That one play right there, even though it's in the third quarter or it's early in the fourth quarter, who's to say that that wasn't the game-changing play that you happen to miss, but everybody else can clearly see it? Technology allows us. They should have, like, I think in the NFL playoffs, they experimented with New York reviewing plays and being able to impart their wisdom based on what they're seeing into the game on penalties that are called. It's not an indictment to your efficiency or your abilities as an official. It's just that we have technology now that shows what really happens. I do not agree with, or I should say, I would think one thing that should be changed is the speed of reviews. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is you should not be able to go frame by frame with still pictures to warrant whether a play is reviewable, overturned or not. There should be one level of speed. If you want to make it 50%, if you want to make it 30%, whatever that level of speed is, and whatever the review shows you with that level of speed, that's how it should be warranted for the game. It should not go down to, because you can go frame by frame, like you have an actual camera taking pictures, that should determine what really happened in the game. Because the game is so fast, I think 30 to 50% warranted across the board, and that should be mandated. That's what I would like to see. I don't like frame-by-frame reviews.
See, if you take this frame 60 times zoomed in and and pause it right here, you can see that he actually had his pinky finger on the tag of his jersey, the flag stands. Yeah. Flag stands.
Or the ball was moving. Just because the ball is moving doesn't mean that I don't have control of it.
Right.
Like the ball can move from my hands to me tucking it in, or just move around in my hands, and I can still have full control of it. But because you were able to slow it down and saw a little bit of a twist, that means I didn't have control of it. So it's a fumble. It's ridiculous.
It's a ball. It's going to move a little bit. It's a round object. Come on, man.
Exactly.
My like you mentioned at the start there, my least favorite penalty in the NFL, I have to say, is a defensive holding penalty. Yeah. 5 yards and an automatic first down. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Like 5 yards, fine. But an automatic first down, it could be 3rd and 20. You get a defensive holding 5 yards automatic. What? Who came up with that?
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
Least favorite penalty. So the next one, we had to move into the more depressing stuff. The Bengals game came up. We had Joe Shiesty came in the Arrowhead. They were down 21-3. The amazing stop right before the end of the first half at the goal line. And they go to OT. Chiefs won the coin toss, and we flip the script here. The Bengals get the stop, and then the Bengals end up winning the game. So what was the main reason for the collapse in the second half? What happened? Was it the Bengals defense that really stepped up, or were the Chiefs just – what changed?
So I'd be remiss to not give a lot of credit to the Cincinnati Bengals. Not only did you beat the Chiefs twice in less than a month, but in 30 minutes of the second half in the game one, regular season, you only gave up 3 points to the Chiefs. In 30 minutes in the second game in the AFC Championship, you only gave up 3 points. So to say that this is a game that the Chiefs lost or imploded would be doing a disservice to the Bengals defense, right? If you do that twice, especially on those stages, the one time the Bengals needed the win to win the AFC North, and they got it. The other time they needed the win to win the AFC to go to the Super Bowl, and they got it by shutting us out basically in the second half of both games. Now, I believe that play before halftime, I don't mind the call to go for it. I don't agree with the play call. Now, if you go back to that play, there were 9 seconds left. They ran a rollout play to the left that took 4 seconds off the clock. Smart play by Patrick Mahomes, rolled out, did not have a receiver, threw it into the dirt. Took 4 seconds. Now, in my mind, he's coming to the sideline, and the conversation is, well, if that took 4 seconds, we can run one more play that could take 4 seconds. And we still have 1 second left on the clock, maybe two, to kick a field goal. It's not like they were on the 10-yard line. They were on the 1-yard line. So the play was going to be quick no matter what. I thought that they should have rolled out and did the same exact play to the other side of the field, or that he should have just looked to one receiver. If that receiver wasn't open, throw the ball away, kick the field goal. If you remember, even though the Chiefs were up 11 points at that time, there was a lot of dejection on the side of the Cincinnati Bengals until they got that stop. And then everything changed. The body language, they were chest bumping, high-fiving. They were running off the field like they were winning. They were still losing. And the Chiefs got the ball to open the third quarter. So that turned the tide of the entire game from an emotional standpoint. And I believe that Patrick Mahomes was shook up. He was not the same player the entire second half based on that decision. And I think that he probably wore it on his shoulders for the entire halftime, thinking about what he did wrong on that last play. And before you knew it, it was the middle of the fourth quarter, and he couldn't shake it off. And that affected everybody else, their body language, their approach, their energy was all different in the second half. And they went into, like I said earlier, they went into trying not to lose mode. In the first half, we scored on three of the four. We had the ball three of the four times. We scored touchdowns. And the fourth time was that one that we got stopped at the 1 yard line. We had our foot on the gas pedal. In the second half, we rode the brake. And, and give credit to the Bengals. They took advantage of that, just like they did when we were in Cincinnati less than a month earlier. So, I think it's a learning experience. It's a growing opportunity for who I still believe is the best quarterback in the league and Patrick Mahomes. And I'm sure they'll have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder going into this season next year.
I think that was word for word what we said on the show after that game.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember sitting on the couch and they got that stop. And I just said, I looked at the wife. And I just said that's the game changing play right there. That's huge. That was massive. Yep. You know, we talked about it on the show. Like what was said in the locker room? Like, did Andy even look at Patrick in the locker room at that point? Like, there's probably so much. I don't know a word to use. I don't want to say hatred. Obviously, that's not the correct term. But like, just everyone's just so upset with how what just transpired right there at the very end of the half. And yeah,
well, think about it. Halftime is about 13, 14 minutes long. By the time you get in there, usually from a player's perspective, you got time to get hydrated. Maybe get a heat pack or an ice bag if you need it. Talk to your teammates. Mix and mingle with the other wide receivers. What are you seeing? What are they doing? Oh, this DB is trash. Oh, he likes – this is what I'm seeing tendency-wise. You get with your quarterback. Quarterback talks about, you know, hey, we did this in the first half. Here are some things that I think we can adjust to in the second half. Then the coaches come in, and they're talking about some of the game plan adjustments with the entire offense. That's all within 13 minutes. You have an opportunity that you can either be looking forward and talking about what you are going to do in the second half, or you can be sitting there sulking about what you didn't do in the first half. I believe that they probably did more sulking about how that last drive ended than thinking about what they needed to do for the whole second half. And it showed itself because – they came out flat, three and out on the first drive. Came out, they had an interception. Came out and didn't put points on the board. Then they had to drive the field, and you have an opportunity. You're down by three. You have all the time on your side. First and goal on the five-yard line with over a minute to go in the game. You score a touchdown, you win. And you go from first and five to having to kick a 42-yard field goal to win the game. There's some kind of disconnect there. There's something going on emotionally and mentally that didn't allow those guys to seize the moment like they did the week earlier against the Bills. And I think that's something that's going to live in their being for a long time, because that's a missed opportunity. And it was very unfortunate. I was shocked in the booth. I think a lot of other people were as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was like you said, they had a decision to make in halftime, and like you said, it seemed like they did a lot more sulking, and it definitely showed in the second half. And you still have to give credit to the Bengals, but yeah, the Chiefs kind of weren't themselves second half, and it was bizarre that, you know, from what we saw in the first half, that it wasn't what you thought was a steamroll, but this is, you know, I think where you would, you know, typically we saw the Bengals a lot this year. But yeah, I think it'll definitely stick around with Mahomes for a little bit, at least this off season. Well, hopefully he can shake it and, make the next step.
Yep. So we'll see how it goes. A lot of business to be done during this offseason with draft picks and free agents. We got Chris Jones and Frank Clark making a lot of money. Melvin Ingram III, I think he was a defensive MVP to me this season, even though he was only with us for a half a season. Tyrann Mathieu is a free agent. Looking for a new contract. Got to decide about cornerback Charvarius Ward, starting corner, is a free agent as well. A lot of guys want to be paid. You got to find another number two receiver. a bigger corner, maybe a beefier, bigger safety. I think we're one of the smallest defensive backfields in the NFL, and we're playing against guys, wide receivers that are 6'4", 6'5" across the AFC, and we gotta figure out how to match Arsenal against those kind of bullets. So, a lot of decisions to be made, but in Andy we trust, in Brett Veach we trust, and you know they haven't really let us down since they've come to Kansas City, so we're not jumping off the ship here at all, and look forward to some redemption. We get a chance to play the Bengals at Cincinnati next year. We get a chance to play, because of the 17th game, we get a chance to go down to Tampa and play Tampa. So there are opportunities where we can get some revenge during the regular season against the teams that beat us in these last two seasons. And hopefully we can get to the promised land and be representing the AFC in Glendale, Arizona next year.
Good old Glendale.
Yeah.
That's where the Legion of Boom died.
That's right.
Every single Seahawk got murdered on that field, one way or another. If you had a magic genie, just one wish, what's the one player or just one thing that you can add to the Chiefs this offseason that you think would just be absolutely perfect?
I would say a consistent pass rusher to be opposite Melvin Ingram. A speed guy on the other end. Frank Clark has had a phenomenal career in the postseason. Most people don't realize that Frank Clark is top five in NFL history in sacks in the postseason. But Chris Jones has not had a sack in the postseason in his entire career. And people talk about Chris Jones as being like the next level Aaron Donald, a below Aaron Donald type of player, and he's not. So how do you get the most out of Chris Jones, who you're paying, and how do you get a player that can be more consistent, not just in the postseason, than Frank Clark? I think you have to go young, and you have to get somebody that's going to be a dog off the edge on the other side. I don't know if you have that in the 30th pick of the first round, but you got to look for it. And you can utilize some of that capital to trade. But to me, getting a taller receiver, all of our receivers that have made really solid plays are below 6 foot. We're playing in a league where there are trees that are playing wide receiver everywhere else. We need some taller receivers that will take the pressure off of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. So I know there's multiple answers there. I guess the first thing that comes to mind would be that pass rusher, because I think teams are recognizing – they're going to have to go blow for blow, throw for throw against Patrick Mahomes more times than not. And if you can't touch receivers down the field, or if they're 6'4" and your DBs are 5'11", you got an automatic mismatch. You better have something to compensate that with a pass rush. And so I feel like that's what's going to be needed, and that's what they're going to look for first and foremost, is something as far as an edge rusher that can put some fear in opposing offenses.
And as a Seahawks fan, I miss Frank Clark. I do. I miss him so much. I think we got one more question for you. All right. We'll get you out of here.
Yeah, one more. It's not as much football, as more as kind of what you went, the path you went after football, and getting in the booth. And this was something that I kind of saw with another – someone else on Twitter that we had on the show last year also. And it's a little odd, but I think it's a good question here. So, so as a color analyst, do you still find yourself rooting for the Chiefs when you're there? Or is it kind of, you've made more of a shift that you're, more a fan of the game, and, because of the type of work that you're doing now in the booth, is it still that fandom there for the Chiefs, or just the game rather than a particular team?
That's a great question. I am always a fan of the Chiefs. I think it's one of the classiest organizations, never mind having taken me under their wing for 6 years in the NFL. So I'll always be a fan. I am a fan of good football. I am a fantasy football guy. I'm in three different leagues. So there are times where I'm not rooting against the Chiefs, but I want my guy on the other team to get some yardage so I can win my fantasy football game during the week, during those particular weekends. So there's a mixed bag there, but I believe I'm able to compartmentalize the game. People ask me if I like the Super Bowl or if I like certain games, there could be a game that ends 10-3 or 10-7. That's still entertaining to me. And I think I'm able to compartmentalize a game. It doesn't have to be a shootout for me to be entertained. So I love the science of the game. I love being able to predict different things that are going to happen, to see things the way I see them. And I love talking about it. I just enjoy talking about it, putting myself out there. I'm not to the level of Tony Romo that's calling plays before they come. But I think most of the guys will tell you, we all see it. We just don't have the guts to stand out there and tell people, hey, this is what's happening next. But we see it. We know tendencies. We can tell when you break the huddle if it's going to be a pass or a run. All the different tips that made us professionals, we can see. But guys in different stances, the way their body language is when they break the huddle, it looks like, oh, it must be a run play. The wide receiver doesn't look like he's happy. All these different things that happen. So I love that aspect of it, and I love the science of the game, what you're going to take advantage of, and being able to see all the moving parts that are happening in the game. But when it's all said and done, I'm a Chief for life. I love this organization. I love calling their games, and I'll forever be a fan.
Man, nothing feels better than sitting on the couch on a Sunday, and then you go, oh, they're definitely throwing a fade to the corner to Kelsey right here. And then they do it, and you're like, oh, I knew it. I knew they were going to do that. Well, we appreciate your time again this year. If you're looking for a fourth fantasy football league, we usually do want to hit you up.
Let me know.
Well, we appreciate your time. Have a fun rest of your evening, and good luck good luck in the basketball game.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Always an absolute pleasure. I remember last year was great with Danon, and this year probably better. Can only get better from here.
Absolutely.
Man, I told the poor guy he has a basketball game he's watching, like one of like a kid or something.
Oh, and, no.
I told him we'll get you out of here quick, but we just keep talking.
Man.
We talk too much. We talk too much, man. You got to learn to shut the hell up, I guess.
That's the nature of our show.
You get carried away. Like, you ask the first couple of questions, and you're like, oh, we've only been going for 15 minutes. And you just keep talking. You're like, oh, shit, we've been doing this for 50 minutes now. I really wanted to ask TJ's question. I wanted to ask him, but we ran out of time. Do you think Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow are the future? Or are they going to fade out? I mean, it is a question that you kind of have to ask because of the hits these young kids take these days.
Right.
Like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, they didn't run around like these young guys do.
No.
They don't run as much as like a Lamar Jackson, but they still take hits.
Right.
So, I mean,
but Joe Burrow just takes hits in the pocket.
Yeah.
He's not even taking hits running. It's just, oh, here's the ball. Oh, there you are. Okay. You got me.
Yeah, exactly. And I saw that meme today, kind of a meme, but it's like, it just said Joe Burrow in 4 years, if the Bengals don't get an offensive line, it was just a picture of Andrew Luck. what's up, Brad? How you doing? We had to talk about the Bengals a little bit. Sorry, bud. Most informative interview I've seen, but now he's gone. Chris Collinsworth is a commentator. Apparently, there's rumors that he might be moving on, but I don't know how true those are. We'll see.
I didn't hear the Chris Collinsworth. I've heard that Al Michaels.
I feel like it's kind of a duo. Before. So if Al Michaels leaves, then you think Chris would too. You would think.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, it's pretty odd when you only like replace one of them, because then the chemistry's kind of gone. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Tarico.
They did bring in Romo and Nance, so I mean.
Right, like Nance, who was with Jim Nance before Tony Romo, though.
God, I'll never be able to remember.
That used to be an iconic duo, and then they switched it up.
Because when they were replacing them, people were just like, there's no way they can replace them. This is like one of the top commentator groups in the league. This is just not going to work. And then Romo comes in. Oh, this is perfect.
So right. I mean, I feel like Tirico and Collinsworth could actually do pretty well.
I think Al Michaels, maybe not Al Michaels. I got it twisted. Never mind. I'll just stop my sentence right there because I got all twisted up. Most backhanded commentary I ever heard on TV. But I like this. Most informative interview I've seen. We love Danen. He was great last year. He was great this year. I'd love to have him on even more if we could, because I just love talking to him. He's always so informative and really answers every question with a lot of information. Can't just really appreciate him. So since we're low on time, maybe we'll do the Bills Seahawks ones next week.
Yeah.
We'll do the first two real quick, because I didn't really get your opinion. I feel like I know your answer, but I just want to confirm with the rest of the audience here that, do you think Matthew Stafford is a Hall of Famer? Because of Richard Sherman's comments, this is now, obviously, everyone's talking about it.
Right. I thought yes, initially. But after hearing his answer in that interview, I'm going to say no.
Interesting.
But it makes me question, well, is Calvin Johnson a Hall of Famer? He was on that same terrible team that Matt Stafford was. Calvin Johnson had more yards and more touches because Matt Stafford was throwing the ball, because they're trying to catch up, and it becomes a passing game.
I think the difference with Calvin, though, is how much he dominated, though. It's not like he was just he was just stat padding because he was catching all Matthew Stafford's balls. It's the fact that he's like out jumping triple coverage.
Right.
I think it's the way he played as well. That's the difference.
And his athletic ability, gave him accolades that, set him apart from other receivers and made him a clear, option for the Hall of Fame. Yes, Matt Stafford's stats are 12th in a couple of different categories of all time. I think the Super Bowl helps. I would need to see continued success from him over the next couple of years, whether that's, back to the playoffs, NFC Championship game. I would consider that a win. Making it to Super Bowl again, I think it's another win still. And I think that kind of stuff, that I think would start to push me more back towards him being a Hall of Famer. And I don't know. It's that first year from going from a terrible team to a super team, kind of like what Dan said. So I think there's a lot of people out there that say that he is a Hall of Famer, and I initially agreed. Now I don't.
Yeah, I think I've been on this thing with the Hall of Fame for like a couple of years now, it feels like. And it's just been dwindled down to where people think you can just put people in the Hall of Fame based strictly off of numbers. And that includes, all pro numbers, Pro Bowl numbers, like your yardage numbers, your how many rings you have numbers. And yes, that plays obviously a very large part in getting the Hall of Fame. But there's more to it than that. Because look at Dan Marino. No rings, but he changed the game. This dude was he changed how the passing game was looked at in the NFL.
Right.
Calvin Johnson changed the way the wide receiver position was viewed, being that large. Like, that kind of guy just used to be a tight end, and he was just a big body, and he'd go up every once in a while. But he was not an outside wide receiver. He changed the way wide receivers looked. I mean, it's more than just the numbers sometimes. And when I look at Matthew Stafford, it's literally just numbers, and not even that impressive of numbers. Look at Phillip Rivers. Same, like Phillip Rivers is Matthew Stafford without the ring now.
Yep.
Just a lot of numbers. And it's not Hall of Fame worthy. Eli Manning has two rings and he beat Tom Brady. Wow, that's really fun and exciting that he beat Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl. His numbers suck. And his overall record for win losses is like, isn't it exactly 500? That's horrible.
I think so, yeah.
He's not a Hall of Famer. And I know people are like, he is. He has two Super Bowls. like most of the time, like this is not even a hot take. I feel like for most quarterbacks who have two Super Bowls, people can't even name most quarterbacks that have two Super Bowls. The only reason we know he has two Super Bowls is because they were over Tom Brady.
Right.
And they were like, and they were impressive Super Bowl wins just because they're over good teams led by Tom Brady. If those are just like two normal Super Bowl wins, just like over, like if he beat maybe Drew Brees in the Super Bowl one year, that's not even possible. You know what I'm saying? If it was just a normal Super Bowl that happened, that wasn't a big deal like that, then no one would ever remember it. That's why people don't remember the Super Bowl. If I told you what Super Bowl happened 8 years ago, people don't know. Super Bowls are important, but, you know, short-term memory, you know, or long-term memory, you know, it dwindles after a while.
Right.
So that's my point. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I never thought he was. And Richard Sherman just kind of, you know, he said it out loud for me because I agree with everything he said. Oh, and then last but not least, because I really wanted to say this because I love how this came full circle, because this is what I thought from the start of the season. And then the way that the season ended for the Bengals, this is just absolutely sexy. So with everything said and done, Ja'Marr Chase did, in fact, win Offensive Rookie of the Year. He popped off this year. He did amazing. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, the season ended because Joe Burrow was sacked. And Ja'Marr Chase juked Jalen Ramsey out of his feet again and was streaking downfield wide open for the game-winning touchdown at the end of the game in the Super Bowl. Potential game-winning touchdown at the end of the Super Bowl. But Joe Burrow couldn't get him the ball because he got sacked. It was the absolute most beautiful moment where it's just like you can have whoever you want on the outside to throw the ball to, but guess what? It's not going to matter if you can't get the ball out of your hands. So,
right.
Can we all agree now? Maybe not everyone. This is I want everyone to agree with me, but I know it's impossible to get people to agree with you. Should they have drafted Penei Sewell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had it in my mock that, you know, protect the kid that's your future. There, and they went on the relationship route with Chase and Burrow because they were played in LSU, and I get that. That's not business. That's not building an NFL team to be successful for the long haul. Yeah, it looked good this year, and a ton of credit to the Bengals for what they did this year with that terrible of an offensive line. Like, Quentin Spain, glad you went to the Bengals. Didn't need you on the Bills anymore because that was terrible play.
I saw his name pop up. At one point, they were talking about the offensive line during the Super Bowl, and I saw his jersey. I was like, oh, my God, is that Quentin Spain? Oh, my God. I didn't even know he was on this team.
Right. Oh, he's been there for a couple of years now. But, yeah, like, and I haven't looked into the draft class a ton. This year, I looked a little bit just for the Bills. But the Bengals better hope that there's a blue-chip offensive lineman anywhere on the offensive line at number 32, at number 31, because they're going to
Penei Sewell. Penei Sewell this year.
Because they're going to need to get a veteran. They're going to need to draft one, if not two or three, depending on, you know, how early their draft picks are, or later on in the rounds or what's left. But that is, I think, the clear cut goal for the Bengals on offseason.
Whether that's drafting, I feel like every position you draft should probably just be offensive line. Maybe corner, too. They need some help in the defensive back end as well, obviously.
Yeah.
They have the pieces, but they're going to have to replace Eli Apple, obviously. It'd be nice to get some depth back there.
Same with the Hargraves, too.
Yep. He'll be,
That dummy.
Hargraves, what a guy. But I feel like, you know, like my last comment on this, at least, you might not be able to get a Ja'Marr Chase, but you can get a Ja'Marr Chase in almost every draft. You cannot get a Penei Sewell in every draft.
Yep.
A blue chip offensive lineman that you can have on your team for like 10, 15 years does not come along very often. You can get a Ja'Marr Chase every once in a while, more often than a Penei Sewell. So. The way that game ended was just absolute chef's kiss.
Absolutely.
So that's just my opinion. Congratulations to the Rams. They did, in fact, win it all. Matthew Stafford got a ring. OBJ got a ring. Hope his recovery goes well.
Yeah.
Andrew Whitworth got his ring. Von Miller got another. Aaron Donald, obviously. Freaking Eric Weddle. I mean, so many people got a ring that deserved it this year. So I am happy for the Rams and a lot of those players. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. I went 4-for-4 on our prop bets last week. I got the coin flip correct on heads. We both got first offensive play being a run correct. We got both saying no to an onside kick, and we both got sack before touchdown correct.
Nice.
I got the color Gatorade wrong. I said lemon, lime, yellow. You said blue, and you got that right.
Yeah, buddy.
Blue Gatorade.
Blue Gatorade.
Well done. That's a good one. I wonder what the – you should put some money on it. Jeez. You did say tails. That's – oh, it's an option. You said tails. Yeah. Coin flip winner, we both said won the game. Come to find out that the last 7 coin flip winners have lost. I would have changed my bet knowing that. So, because
yeah,
the Bengals won the coin flip and they lost. So that's actually 8 in a row now. But we got that wrong. What else did we get wrong? We got roughing the passer penalty. We said yes, there's actually no roughing the passer penalty in this game.
Quite just surprising. A lot of pass interference penalties.
Yeah. And then the last play was a QB kneel. We said no, when in fact it was a fourth down turnover on downs from the Bengals, and the Rams took a knee.
Yep.
Unfortunate. Very unfortunate. So I think we both maybe went 4-for-4 if I'm looking at this right. I didn't count yours up, but 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 4-for-4 for you as well. So 50% is not bad. Take it.
Not too shabby.
Broke about even, depending on the odds, but the NFL season is over. The off season is here, and we hope that you guys all take the ride with us during this off season. It should be a lot of fun. What's up, Mr. Busby? As we enter this NFL off season, we'll be talking a lot about Seahawks and Bills. Look forward to the draft, free agency. It should be fun, very wild, and we'll be here for it. Any last thoughts before we leave this season behind us? Any closing remarks for the 2021-22 NFL season?
Game-wise, no. But Andrew Whitworth, I don't know if you saw that at the honors. Holy crap, was that good speech.
I did not see his speech. I'm going to have to find it. Is it on NFL.com/honors?
Probably.
Because he was supposed to be our off-the-field person for this episode, but we didn't have time to go over him. So maybe we'll play a speech next week.
There you go.
That might be something we do.
Like, I can see why you won now.
I mean, Andrew Whitworth is like such – because I was just reading – if you go to NFL.com/honors, you can read about Andrew Whitworth. We'll talk about him next week and maybe play his speech. But, yeah, this dude, a lot of money, a lot of time. He's been in the league for 16 seasons. So, I mean, this dude has probably built quite the rapport of donating his time and money. So we'll talk about Andrew Whitworth next week. We'll talk about the Seahawks and Bills, what their offseason is going to look like. And just stay tuned for, you know, we might have some more guests on, hopefully. You know, it's always a good time having one on, get their opinion about things. So, we shall see you next week
on and off the field.